example of the Messenger Muhammad. And the worst of thing, the worst of all the affairs, the worst of all the matters, are those things that have been newly introduced and newly innovated in the religion. Because every matter that has been newly brought into the religion is a deviation and a going astray. And all of that deviation and all of that going astray has its ultimate destination in the fire of hell. Some years ago, I'm sure most of us probably remember an incident that took place in the United States of America, when a black man by the name of Rodney King was beaten brutally by the LAPD, the Los Angeles Police Force. Not that that was a particularly strange event, apparently. It's something that happens quite often in America. But what was strange about this particular event is that the whole thing was caught on a video camera by someone filming the whole incident from his flat. This footage of this man on the ground being beaten, kicked, senseless by the police was then released to the media. And during the subsequent trial, the policemen, all of them, were acquitted. They suffered no charges, they were not put up for any type of criminal activity. And what proceeded to happen in the United States of America were the worst riots that the United States of America had seen, well, anyway, for a very long time, if not in their history. And the cry, the slogan of the rioters was a very simple but amazingly true statement. No justice, no peace. That was their slogan. No justice, no peace. And this is a very true statement. The fact is that the affairs of the human being in our social activities as human beings living together, acting together, they are built upon justice. Human beings can bear all sorts of hardships. Human beings can put up with starvation. They can put up with extreme thirst, extremes of hot and cold, disease. In fact, human beings can easily put up with war, and sometimes, quite often, they're quite happy to go to war. But one thing, well, there are other things, but one of the things that human beings cannot actually put up with for an extended period of time is injustice and tyranny and oppression. It is only a matter of time before people will rebel and overthrow in one way or another that injustice and tyranny and oppression. So justice and the concept of justice is something really as intrinsic, and this could actually take us in a very interesting direction, but I'm not going to let it go there. But it's very interesting that for human beings, there are intangible, emotional, psychological needs that we have that are in fact more, just as, if not more important, than our physical needs. So, for us to have justice can be as important, if not more important, than having food and drink, and shelter and clothing. As human beings may be quite ready to forego all of those things to try and create some justice and to remove oppression in their life. So before we answer the question, really, Islamic law, justice or oppression, we have to start examining what is justice. What do we mean by justice? What is this justice that is so important, that human beings demand it and want it and seek it and desire it? Well, one way of understanding something is by examining its opposite. One way of understanding something is by examining its opposite. So the opposite of justice could be defined as oppression, injustice, tyranny. Those are some of the things that we could understand to be the opposite of justice. Generally, anyway, justice implies putting everything in its correct place. That's what justice is. It is putting something in its correct place. And injustice or oppression is taking something out of its correct place. And with the concept of justice, you find very much linked up with the concept of justice is the concept of rights. What are the rights? The human rights, the animal rights, the whatever rights it may be. Okay? Our rights. Now, the concept of justice does not necessarily mean compassion, mercy, kindness, forgiveness. Those things are actually not necessarily equated with justice at all. Justice could be brutal. Justice could be harsh. And it could still be termed as being justice. Compassion, mercy, forgiveness, they are other qualities. Desirable ones, albeit. But because there is harshness or there is toughness in something, that does not mean that that thing is lacking justice. And that is an important thing to know. On the opposite hand, oppression therefore means putting things in the wrong place. Unbalance, being unfair, not giving things their rights. So, these are the concepts. This is the concept of justice and oppression. What is justice? What is oppression? But we find that this idea of justice is always going to be somewhat subjective. I mean, whose idea of justice are we talking about? Who defines justice? What really is justice? Does every human being have some type of common idea of justice? Certainly true justice is something that nobody is going to be able to complain about. If true justice has been established, no one is going to be able to argue that yes, the just thing was done. That's true and perfect justice. So, if we talk about the Islamic law, okay, justice or oppression, okay, it asks, well, there's another question that comes to mind. Now, is justice something that is linked with law, or is justice a quality that exists on its own? Okay, this is the question. For example, can you be just although the laws that you implement are unjust? Okay, can you have just laws? But if the people who are implementing those laws, they are unjust, what do you have? Certainly in that scenario, it's going to be not so confusing. You can have laws that are very just. You can have laws that are balanced and laws that fit the needs of human beings. You can have the most excellent constitution and you can have the most excellent laws and excellent legal framework. But if the people who are applying those laws, they are unjust, then it doesn't matter what the laws are. If the people who are implementing those laws are unjust, and they implement them in an unjust manner, you have injustice. But now the question comes the other way, and this is something we're going to have to return to it towards the end of my talk. How about the other way around? What if you have a people who are just? If you have a people who are just, they aspire for justice. They seek justice and they try to be just. But the laws that they're trying to implement and the way of and the system that they're trying to establish is fundamentally flawed. it in fact puts things in the wrong place, then can you really have a just system? People perhaps will accept it because there is the feeling of justice, of equity, that they are being dealt with fairly. But ultimately, that is still going to perpetrate in its end injustice. However just the people are who want to implement it, if the laws and the system itself is unjust, then the end result is going to be a negative one. It is going to be a disastrous one, ultimately. What I won't use the word proof, but what I do want to try and establish today is two things. First of all, that the laws of Islam, the laws of Islam, the Sharia, the Islamic law, is not only just, but it is in fact the only truly just system. And the second thing that I want to establish is that Islam seeks to nurture and encourage and drives the true believer to be just in and of him or herself. So let's just talk about the first thing. There are no shortage of verses from the Quran, statements from the Prophet, and examples from the lives of his companions to show how Islam teaches, preaches, enjoins justice, and forbids and admonishes and commands to fight against injustice. So let's just go through a few of those verses. I've eliminated quite a lot, so I've been quite selective here. I'm not going to be comprehensive. This is just to give an overview. For example, let us take Surah Al-Nahl, which is the 16th surah, or the 16th chapter of the Quran. If we look in verse 90, the meaning of the verses say, Allah commands doing justice. God commands doing justice, doing good to others, and giving to near relatives, and He forbids indecency, wickedness, and rebellion. He admonishes you so that you may take heed. And in Surah Al-Hajj, which is the 22nd chapter of the Quran, in the 41st verse, so verse 41, these are the people who, if we establish them in authority in the land, they will establish prayer and pay the poor due, the zakah, and enjoin justice and forbid evil. And the final decision of all affairs is in the hands of Allah, in the hands of God. And again in Surah Al-Imran, which is the third surah in the 25th ayah, it states, warn those who deny Allah's revelations, slay the prophets without any justification, and kill those from among the people who enjoin justice about the news of a painful punishment. Meaning, warn those people who slay the prophets and kill the people who enjoin justice. Warn them of a punishment. And again in Surah An-Nisa, which is the fourth surah, we find in the 135th verse, O you who believe, stand firm for justice. Stand firm for justice. And this is actually a very strong verse of the Quran talking about justice. O you who believe, stand firm for justice and bear true witness for the sake of God, even though it is against yourselves. So the Quran tells us to stand firm upon justice, to speak the truth, even if it is going to be against yourself. When you witness, witness truthfully, even if it is against yourself, your parents, your relatives. And it does not matter whether the party is rich or poor. Allah is the well-wisher of both, so do not let your selfish desires swerve you from justice. If you distort your testimony or decline to give it, then you should remember that Allah is fully aware of your actions. And Ibn Kathir, excuse me, who's one of the famous commentators on the Quran, he mentioned an incident where one of the Prophet's companions, his name was Abdullah ibn Rawaha, He was sent to collect the jizya. The jizya is a tax that is taken from non-Muslims who live in the land of the Muslims. Okay, under the protection of the Muslims. So he sent this Abdullah, the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, sent this Abdullah ibn Rawaha to collect the tax from the Jews of Khaybar. Okay? And when he came to them, they tried to bribe him. They tried to bribe him and they said to him, go easy on us. And so this Abdullah, he said, by Allah, there is no one who is more beloved to me than the Prophet Muhammad. May God's peace and blessings be upon him. And I have come from the Prophet Muhammad, who is the most beloved to me. Yet my love for him and my hatred for you. And he actually said that you are more despicable to me than some despicable creatures. But I would never let my hatred for you cause me to do you injustice. Meaning the fact that I hate you. The fact that I hate you is not going to make me treat you in a way that is unjust. I'm not going to treat you in a bad way. Because why? Do not let your hatred of a people, the Quran tells us. Do not let your hatred of a people cause you to do them injustice. This is the command of the Quran. And when the Jews heard that, they said, verily, this is the justice upon which the heavens and the earth, it rests on this type of justice. So this is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this is what the Creator tells us in the Quran. Okay, and again, a similar surah, in a similar place, in a similar verse in Surah Al-Ma'idah this time, which is the fifth surah in the eighth, it says, O you who believe, be steadfast for the sake of God and bear true witness and let not the enmity of a people incite you to do injustice. Do justice. That is piety. That is nearer to piety. But when it says that is nearer to piety, it actually means that is piety. Okay? And fear Allah, for surely Allah is fully aware of all of your actions. And Ibn Kathir again, he mentions an incident connected with this where a man came, one of his companions came to the Prophet, and he wanted to make the Prophet witness that he was going to give his one of his child a gift. So when he came, the Prophet said, are you going to give all of your other children the same gift? So he said, no. He said, I will not bear witness to an injustice. You must treat all of your children equally. And even this, that this man wanted to give one child a gift from his children that he was not giving to the others, and he wanted the Prophet to witness that. And he refused. He said, I'm not going to witness that because that is injustice. This is what Ibn Kathir mentions in relation to that. And also in Surah Al-Araf, which is the 7th Surah, 1 verse 199, the Quran says, show forgiveness, speak for justice, and avoid the ignorant people. Now, there are also some narrations from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, mentioning the great benefits of those, or the great station of those people who implement justice. And we have examples from the Prophet Muhammad's own life where he showed the nature, how he was very just. So for example, the Prophet Muhammad, he said, behold, the dispensers of justice will be seated on thrones of light beside God, on the right side of the merciful, exalted and glorious. And he said, the dispensers of justice are those who do justice in their rules, in matters relating to their families, and in all that they undertake to do. So meaning the dispensers of justice who behave justly in every matter, whether it's their family, whether the rulings they give, and in fact all matters in their life, they behave in a manner that is just. And here is an incident from the life of the Prophet, which really shows, and we will also now see how this example of the Prophet physically really manifested itself in the behavior of those Muslims who are with him, the companions. Okay, so there is an example from a tribe There was a woman from one tribe, from Beni Makhzum, and she had stolen. So they were thinking, some of the people were thinking, who is going to go to the Prophet and intercede on her behalf? Meaning, because they didn't want the penalty of having her hand chopped off to be implemented on her, because she was from this strong tribe. So they wanted someone to go and talk to the Prophet and intercede. So no one dared to do it. So they said, why don't we send Osama ibn Zayd? He is someone the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ used to love a lot. Okay, so Osama went to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the Prophet said to him, do you try to intercede for somebody in a case connected with Allah's prescribed punishments? And then he got up and he delivered a sermon. So the Prophet, when he found that someone was trying to prevent one of Allah's prescribed punishments from being implemented, this is what he said. What destroyed the nations that came before you was that if a noble person among them stole, they would forgive him. And if a poor person among them stole, they would prescribe God's legal punishment on him. He said, by Allah, if Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad, stole, I will cut off her hand. Bukhari collected it. Fatima, as we know, was the very beloved daughter of the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him. He said, look, if my daughter stole, I will implement the punishment of Allah upon her. This is justice. This is equity. That no one is treated differently because of their station, because of their being rich or their being poor. And this, in fact, is something, this type of justice is something upon which the stability of society is built. And this is something the scholars had mentioned. For example, this is something that Ibn Taymiyyah, one of the great scholars of Islam, he said, that God will support a nation that is just, even if it is disbelieving. So if there is a nation who is just, and justice is the norm in their society, God will support that nation even if they do not believe in God and His Prophet and His revelations. He will support that nation over a nation that is unjust, even if it is believing. So a nation where justice is something that seeks to be established, where equity and fair treatment amongst people is the reality, then God is going to support those people, even if they do not believe in Him, over a nation that is a believing nation, but that nation is corrupt. That nation treats the rich differently from the poor. That nation treats such and such people differently from that and that people. God does not support that nation. Why? Because the affairs of the people, the ordering of society, the peaceful coexistence of human beings depends and is built upon justice. Okay? And this is why there's a beautiful saying from Umar ibn al-Khattab. And he mentioned in one speech he gave to some people, okay? He said, O my people, Islam is a mighty fortress and a sturdy gate. The fortress of Islam is justice and its gate is truth. If you destroy the fortress and demolish the gate, you will undermine the defenses of the religion. And he went on to say, Islam will remain strong so long as the sultan or the authority is strong. And he says, the strength of the sultan or the authority, the ruler, it doesn't come from flogging or from the whip, nor from killing with the sword, but from ruling with justice and holding fast to truth. This is what the strength. And this is actually not true just of the Muslim nation, it is true of any nation. In fact, if you look through history, you will find it. I am sure if you study history carefully, you will find this is the story of the nations of people. That when people implement justice, then you find that their society strengthens and prospers. When they stick to truth, then that society strengthens and prospers. And when they abandon it, then surely that society will begin to disintegrate as much as they abandon justice. Now, we find that the Prophet's companions, they learned these teachings and they acted according to them. And it's one of the amazing things when you study the early history of Islam, of the early Muslims, what I would like to call the true Muslims, the people who really followed Islam the way it was supposed to be followed. Not like a lot of us today, Ramadan Muslims, you know, we just become Muslim for Ramadan, the rest of the time we're just like, I don't know what we are, okay? But these people, look at the way how seriously they took these commands to be just. Abu Bakr was the first ruler of the Muslims after the death of the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, and he was very concerned about justice. In fact, one of the first things that he said when he became caliph or khalif of the Muslims, he said, "The weak among you will be strong with me till God willing his rights have been vindicated. And the strong among you will be weak with me if the Lord wills and I have taken what is due from him." What does that mean? He means the poor people are going to be strong. I'm going to treat the poor people as if they're strong and the rich people as if they're weak. So the poor people don't have to worry that because you're poor, I'm going to despise you and I'm going to treat you badly and I'm going to trample over your rights because you're poor and it doesn't really matter. No, I'm going to treat you as if you were strong. And you rich people and you people from noble lineages, don't think that your richness and your nobility is going to save you. I'm going to treat you just like you're a poor person. Meaning people are going to get equity from me. They're going to be treated alike. So no one should be afraid that their rights are going to be transgressed against. And there are many, many examples actually from the lives of not only Abu Bakr, but many of the companions. There's one story about Ali ibn Talib, who was the fourth khalif. And there's one story, for example, how after a certain battle, someone had stolen his armor. And he found a Christian with his armor. So he accused this Christian that he had stolen his armor and he lodged a complaint he's the caliph of the Muslims, by the way, right? He's ruling now an empire that stretches from, I don't know, beyond the Euphrates, down into West Africa or whatever, however far it had reached at that stage, not quite that far, but beyond Egypt anyway. So this is the size of his empire, he's the ruler, yet when he sees a man wearing his armor, what does he do? He goes to the judge. He goes to the judge and he lodges a complaint with the Qadi. So the Qadi calls Ali ibn Talib, the judge, he calls the ruler, the whole ruler of the Muslims, and he asks him, okay, who are your witnesses that this is your armor? And he says, well, my servant, he's a witness, and my son, they're the two witnesses, they know that's my armor. And the judge said, well, I can't accept their witness because they have an interest in it. Because one's your servant and one's your son, they've got an interest. So that was it. So he said, I can't take this armor from the man. So Ali accepted it. He's the ruler of the Muslims, he accepted it. So if that's the decision of the judge, that's the judge's decision. And he went away. Of course, when the Christian found out about that, he was so impressed. He came with the armor, he said, this is your armor. And also, he gave Ali on top of that a horse. And also, he became Muslim. That's just one example. There's another very strong example. And if you understand, if you know anything about the Arabs before the time of Islam, you will know how very, very much they respected the strong tribes and the noble lineage, and it's something they used to consider to be so important. If you understand really how important this concept of lineage is, you'll reflect on this story. There is a man, there was a certain prince, a Ghassanid prince. The Ghassanids, by the way, were a largely Christian Arab tribe, okay, based in Sham. There was one certain prince who had converted to Islam and he was staying as the actual guest of Umar. Umar was the second khalif, okay. And Umar was, in fact, history is fabled with the legends of the justice of Umar. In fact, we could just spend the whole rest of the talk talking about the stories of his treatment of and his dispensation of justice. It's legendary, okay? The justice of Umar. It became known that this was a phrase, the justice of Umar. In fact, even when the Muslim armies were fighting in Syria and the area now that's known as Jordan and Syria and Palestine and that sort of area, in fact, Christians were writing to Umar They were writing to him, asking him to come and liberate them from the rule of the Byzantines. And in the letter they would say, well, one letter reads that even though they are our brothers in faith, meaning even though the Byzantines are Christians like us, they treat us unjustly. Whereas we know that you will treat us justly. So they were inviting the Muslims to come and rid them of the tyranny of the Byzantines. This is how the justice of Umar was known. So there's one man, this Jabala, who is from this noble tribe, this noble man from this noble tribe, he was making pilgrimage. He was making actually the small pilgrimage. And one poor Arab man trod on his cloak and pulled his cloak down. So this man, he hit this poor Arab, smashed him in the nose, right? And sort of pushed him away. And when that happened, this Arab went to Umar. He went to complain to Umar. Again, this is the caliph of the Muslims, and this poor guy is just going up and complaining to him. That's just another thing. I mean, you know, you've got this poor guy just going up to Umar, who's the caliph of all the Muslims, and complaining. It's just amazing just thinking about these type of things. I mean, this is a man, Umar ibn al-Khattab, used to sleep sometimes on the steps outside the mosque. He just used to eat dried bread. If you'd seen him, you wouldn't have known him any different from just some, you know, average guy or less than average guy on the street. People used to be amazed at what that's the leader of these Muslims, this army, this people, this great, you know, conquering people, and this is the leader, and that was him, Umar. So he went to Umar and he complained about this guy. So Umar called him, and this is what Jalabi said. He said, "This rascal trod on my reverence for the Kaaba, okay?" And he said, "If I wasn't allowed to shed blood here, I would have killed him. I would have chopped his head off, okay?" And so Umar said to him, you know, he asked this man, "Did you tread on his scarf? Did you do this on purpose? Did you aggravate him purposefully?" And the man said, "No, I was very crowded. It's the Kaaba's crowded. I trod on his cloak by mistake." So Umar said to the man, "Jalaba, do you agree that this was not intentional?" He said, "I don't care whether it was intentional or not." He said, "I am a noble Arab and he is some commoner. And it doesn't matter to me whether he did it on purpose or not. He dishonored my position." So Umar said, "In Islam, there is no distinction between a prince and a commoner. You could not take the law into your own hands merely on the grounds that you are a prince and he is a commoner." So Jalaba got very upset about that. He said, "I thought that Islam would add to my dignity and prestige, and here Islam is becoming an instrument for my humiliation." So Umar said, "The law has to have its own course, and I'm obliged to do justice. You've got two alternatives. Either you patch up with this man, or you're going to have to face my verdict. And the verdict is going to be that whatever that he did to the man is allowed to do back to him." Okay, so if he's punched a man in the nose, this man is going to be able to punch him back in the nose. Okay, it's justice, right? May not be merciful, but it's just. Okay, so the man says, "Jalaba," when he saw that Umar was serious, he says, "Well, give me a day to think about it." So Umar said, "Okay, you have a day to think about it." In the meantime, the guy packs up his bags and he goes off and goes back to Constantinople and he becomes a Christian again. Okay, and what did he say? He said, "I denounce Islam because it doesn't discriminate between a peasant and a foreigner." Meaning, when he went back to Constantinople, to the lands of Christianity, he was going to find that he would be respected for a noble, and he could treat commoners just about any way that he liked. Okay, that's and we got actually quite a few examples of that. One actual personal example himself, where he treated someone badly. Some man came to him and he used to have a certain time dealing with the normal people, and then he used to have a certain other time for dealing with very important affairs. One guy comes to him when he's dealing with these very important affairs and starts pestering, so Umar lashes out at him with his crop, right? And said, "How are you disturbing me at this time? This is not your time." So the man goes off upset. And then Umar, he feels remorse. He goes running after this guy. He's the leader of the whole people. Right? He goes running after this guy, begging him for forgiveness. He said, I did you wrong, please forgive me. Okay? And not only that, when the guy says, and the man, he says to the man, take my stick, take this and whip me back. Because I don't want you to have anything against me, not in this life or the next. So the man says, you're the Emir al-Mu'minin, may Allah forgive you and me. Okay? So I forgive you. But that's not the end of it. Umar, he goes back to his house and he starts crying and he starts weeping. Okay? And he starts crying to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, complaining about his estate. He says, this is what he says. He says, O Umar, you are low, but Allah raised you up. You are wandering astray, but God guided you. You were base, but Allah ennobled you and gave you sovereignty over the people. Now one of them comes and asks you for acquittal for the harm done to him and you beat him. What answer would you give before Allah? Umar kept chiding himself, holding a straw in his hand, and he said, I wish I was a straw like this. I wish my mother had not given birth to me. This is how bad he felt about what he had done. So this is, that certainly we can learn from those type of things. And we could mention many, many more incidents that Islam is teaching, Islam is enjoining upon the people justice. It's one of the essential qualities that a true believer in God must possess. It is something that the stability of a nation and a people relies upon and is founded upon, justice. And it's a thought, by the way, for every Muslim when we wonder about our present condition. And we think about our lands. Where do we find justice in the lands of the Muslims? Where do we find it? We don't even find justice amongst the people who call themselves workers for Islam. So this is the sad state in which we're in. Of course, perhaps when we ask this question, Islam, Islamic law, justice or oppression, we're not talking about general things. Yes, okay, you might say the Quran enjoins upon justice generally, it generally enjoins and leads people and tells them to be just. Well, that's fine. But no, your Islamic system, you may say, or the Islamic system, and many Muslims may think this as well, is unjust. Meaning, the belief is that the laws themselves and the system itself is unjust inherently. Now, is that the case? The problem with this is that in order to really do a topic like this justice, you have to really study Islamic law quite deeply. It's very easy to superficially say, oh man, you what, a guy steals and his hands is chopped off? Call that justice? What? Someone commits adultery and they're stoned to death and apostatizes and that it's death penalty and you get flogged for being drunk openly and so on and so on and so forth. Okay? And certainly it's not a problem. We can sit down and we could take each one of these particular individual laws and we can rationalize. In fact, you can rationalize just about anything. Okay? You can rationalize anything, but we can rationalize it. I mean, all of these laws have a very good basis on why they are the way that they are. But the fact is that these laws are founded on a whole different premise. When we talk about, for example, justice here in the West, when we talk about here about human rights in the West, we have to understand something. The understanding that we have here of justice and human rights and so on and so forth is based upon a particular ideological and philosophical outlook towards the nature of the human being, the nature of society, and the nature of this world. And that is a philosophical outlook that Islam does not share. The concepts that are dominant in the West are essentially ones that are materialistic. Our ideas that we have here in the West of human rights and human wrongs are based upon those materialistic perceptions. But the teachings of Islam are completely different. Those things that Islam considers to be human rights and human wrongs are different. Because the premise on which we understand the nature of the human being, the premise on which we understand the nature of this world itself, is different. Because Islam and the system of Islam and the justice system of Islam, and therefore by extension the laws of Islam, are based on the knowledge that there is a creator and that there is a day of judgment and that there is a paradise and that there is a hellfire. And the right of the human being and the things that are considered to be in the Quran, oppression, and what we would consider, as we remember our definition in the beginning, that if justice is putting everything in its right place, and if injustice is putting everything or putting things in their wrong place, it all asks and boils down to the fundamental questions. What is right and what is wrong? What is the right place and what is the wrong place? What is the correct way to behave and what is the incorrect way to behave? What should we do and what should we not do? Those are the questions we have to come back and ask. Because if we're going to accuse Islam and its system and its laws of being unjust, then really, to challenge it effectively, you have to challenge its fundamental premise. And vice versa. So Islam is really telling us that the nature of the human being, the need and the fundamental need of the human being, is just as much spiritual as it is material. If we create a society where, although people may seek for justice and strive, now I'm talking about Western society, which I believe essentially the rule of law, the desire for justice is very strong. It is, and it exists. And still, probably you will feel in this society, maybe I think it is changing. I think it is changing. Unfortunately, it is. But until today, you probably still feel that if you go to court, you're going to be dealt with justly. People are not going to discriminate against you because you're like this or you're like that. And the fact is that it still amazes me. I remember a friend of mine phoned me up. It was last year actually. And George Bush's niece, I think, was in court for taking drugs and stuff. And she had to be sent to a rehabilitation center. And Dick Cheney was being pulled up before the courts because he was involved in some bribery and scandals and corruption. And you know, this friend of mine was laughing at the other end of the phone about it, and I was saying, well, you know, I don't know really why you're laughing, because I find it amazing. I mean, this is the second most important man and most powerful man probably in America, and he's been taken before the courts. I said, my brother, that's how we used to be once upon a time. In your land where you're calling me from, do they do that? If the son of the prince commits some crime, is he going to be put up before the courts? You bet he's not. You can be sure he's not. If the president's nephew, if he gets in trouble, is he going to be put in front of the court? You can be sure he's not. He's going to get away with it. I said, so I don't know why we're laughing, really. So I think that that's what we find. But my point is this, is that although the quest and the desire for justice is there, the system itself is the most unjust system. It is the most unjust system because it is based on a completely false premise. It is based on a completely false ideology. An ideology that denies essentially God's existence, that does not seek to rule people by the laws of God, but rather seeks to rule people by the laws and the whims and the opinions and the desires of human beings. And if there is a God, which I know without any doubt that there is, and if God has revealed knowledge from Himself that is perfect according to His absolute infallible knowledge, that He knows the human beings better than they know themselves, then who could be more astray and misguided than people who turn away from that knowledge and they follow their whims and their desires. So let us see, therefore, what is the nature of truth and falsehood, of right and wrong, of the means that we should judge from the verses of the Quran. This is why we find in, for example, Surah Al-Ma'idah, which is the 49th surah, the 50th verse, and this He commands, meaning God commands, judge between them by what God has revealed, and follow not their vain desires. But beware of them, unless they beguile you away from any of that teaching which God has sent down to you. And if they turn away, be assured that for some of their crimes it is Allah's purpose to punish them, and truly most men are rebellious. Do they seek a judgment of the days of ignorance? But who, for a people whose faith is assured, can give better judgment than God? Again in Surah Al-Yunus, which is the 10th surah, and in the 35th to 36th ayah, the meaning of it, it says, say, it is Allah who gives guidance towards truth. Is then He who gives guidance to truth more worthy to be followed, or he who finds not guidance himself unless he is guided? What then is the matter with you? How do you judge? But most of them follow nothing but fancy. Most of them follow nothing but dhan. Dhan means speculation. Truly, speculation can be of no avail against truth. Verily, Allah is aware of all that they do. This establishes, and other verses, a very important premise. Islam teaches that in fact it is the sole prerogative and right of only one being to determine what is right and what is wrong, what is truly good and what is truly evil, what is appropriate and what is inappropriate. And that is the Creator of the heavens and the earth. That is the one who is the all-wise and the all-knowing and the all-seeing and the all-hearing, whose knowledge encompasses everything. And there is another aspect that is important. That because the laws of the human beings by their nature are fallible, the laws of the human beings by the nature of the human being, they are always changing. And they're not always changing according to knowledge. Our laws do not always change because we have now discovered some scientific information that gives us convincing evidence that this thing that was bad before, excuse me, alhamdulillah, was bad after. It's not always that. No, sometimes it's our desires, it's our passions, it's our whims, it's our fancies, it's our prejudice. How many laws are passed because of prejudice? Every time a conservative government comes in, they make laws that are beneficial for those people who vote for them and support them. And when a Labour, well, not there's any difference these days, right? But when a Labour party used to come in, they would pass some laws that were beneficial for the people who voted for them. And when the neo-Nazis come in, they'll pass, or if they come in, or if they do come in, or hopefully they don't, but they will pass laws that are going to be according to their political and ideological ideologies. That's the nature of human beings. So when the nobility were in charge, the laws were the ones that benefited them, etc., etc., etc. That's the nature of the human beings. Because human beings always need some things from others. God does not need anything. He doesn't need us to follow His laws. He doesn't need us to obey Him or to disobey Him. It's not going to make any difference to His kingdom, power and sovereignty whatsoever. God only gives us that information out of His mercy and kindness to us. That is His perfect knowledge that He gives to us. If you do that, it is good for you. And if you don't, then that's bad for you. The only one you are oppressing is your own self. But this is something really to think about. When the Muslim armies were attacking the Persians, The great Persian general at the time, a famous Persian general, his name was Rostam. He called the Muslims. He wanted to talk to one of the Muslims. So one of the Muslims came. His name was Rabia. This companion of the Prophet. This is after the death of the Prophet. Prophet Muhammad, by the way. This companion of the Prophet, he came. Now, Rostam's tent, the carpet on which he and all the nobles had their thrones and their chairs, this was a carpet that was sewn with jewels. The thread was of gold, and this carpet had encrusted into it jewels. The same with the tent. How did Rabia come in? Walks in. Oh, look at that. No. He comes with his spear, sticking his spear in the carpet like that, coming up, right? He walks up and sits down right next to the general. So they get him and they throw him on the floor. So he stands up, he says, I thought you were an intelligent people, but really I find you're very foolish. Because some of you, they lord it over the others. He said, I did not come here because I wanted to come here. You invited me. So the Rostam said, leave him. Leave him alone. So Rostam said to this man, why are you fighting us? Why are you fighting us? He said, if you want camels, we'll give you camels. You want women, you want gold, treasure, we'll give it to you. Just go back to the desert and leave us alone. He said, we have come to take people away from the injustices of man-made religions to the justice of Islam. We have come to take people away from the worship of other human beings to the worship of the true God. We have come to take people away from the narrowness of this life to the vast expanse of this life and the next. Because those people understood that when human beings rule other human beings according to the laws of human beings, that itself is an oppression and an injustice and a type of tyranny. When people are worshipping each other and worshipping this world, and they have turned away from the worshipper of its creator, there is nothing more unjust than that. There is no greater injustice than that at all. Because if injustice means putting something out of its correct place, and if justice is putting something in its right place, then worshipping God and obeying Him is the most right thing the human being can do. And turning away from that is the most inappropriate and the most oppressive thing a human being can do. And that is why the Quran says, "Inna shirka dhulmul azim." Certainly, making partners with God and setting up rivals with God is a most great oppression. This is the basis on which Islam stands. The basis that Islam stands is that the Quran is from the Creator. The laws that are in the Quran, they are from God. Therefore, they are the just laws. But, of course, the effectiveness of those laws and the effectiveness of those of that system is going to depend on the people who implement it. If they are unjust and they are wicked, well, like I said, I can't imagine a more horrific scenario than living in a country that is ruled by Muslim law, by people who do not have the spirit and do not have the justice and do not have the nobility and do not have the good and noble characteristics that a Muslim should have. If they don't have those characteristics, then Islamic law, like any other law, can be used to oppress and terrify people. So what we really need to ask ourselves is this. If we imagine that the Islamic law is unjust, is it really because the laws of Islam are unjust? Or is it because the people who are implementing them do not implement them with justice? Or is it because those laws that they have do not happen to fit our particular idea of what we happen to think today in the 20th century for this brief 40 years or 50 years or 100 years that this civilization is probably going to exist? We have these ideas for this period of time, and we happen to think this, and then it's gone. And we have a new set of ideas. This is the challenge, this is the thing that people really need to sit, they need to think about, they need to contemplate on. I know that at the end of that, I might not have provided many answers. But I hope what I've illustrated is that Islam is a religion that calls for justice. Islam is a religion whose earliest followers practice justice. A justice that they became fabled for. And you should remember that Islam is a civilization that lasted for nearly over 1,000 years. Produced a great civilization. When Muslims talk about going back and implementing the law of God, it's not like Europe and the experience of the Europeans in the Middle Ages. When we think in Europe, oh my God, going back to the God people ruling, we think of the church, we think of witches being burnt at the stake, we think of trial by ordeal, we think of feudalism, we think of chastity belts, we think of all of that. It's horrific. But when we Muslims study our history and we look back, we see a time of unrivaled civilization, advancement, prosperity, justice, equity, nobility. This is our history. Yes, while Europe was in the dark ages, it was the world of Islam that was a light and a beacon of guidance to mankind. Arguably, the greatest civilization human beings have ever produced. If you studied it, you might come to realize that, but because we don't really study it, it's just brushed out under the carpet. 1,000 years, it's like Rome fell and then Europe started. And what happened in between? It's like 1,000 years of Islam is just gone. Rome will study, Rome, although Rome in its height only lasted about, 350 years? 1,000 years of Muslim civilization, boof. The science, the mathematics, the civilization, the arts, the achievements, the philosophy, the mystics. And all of that time, the Muslim lands were ruled by the Islamic law. If it's such justice and oppression and tyranny, do you really think that people could have put up with it for such a long time? And in fact, what you find is the Muslim world today is in a big mess. And if you look back in history, you find, you can see, when Muslims stopped implementing Islamic law and they started adopting Western law, that's when Muslims started to deteriorate and decline. That's what the history tells us if you go back and look at it. And that in itself should make people think. It just doesn't seem to fit that therefore this Islamic law is a system that is so terrible. And without wanting to delay the talk anymore and to go on to subjects that is not even supposed to be under the topic, but it is another thing that I think every intelligent person in this country needs to think about a lot. It's in this time where it seems as if to some of us that there are people in the West who want to start a conflict between the Western world and the Muslim world. They want it. I don't know for sure, but I have a very strong inclination to believe that there are people who want to see conflict. They want it. Why is this propaganda against Islam? Why this? And they know, they even say, it's not Islam we have a problem with, it's Islamic fundamentalism. But what is Islamic fundamentalism? Examine it. What are the Muslim fundamentalists saying? The Muslim fundamentalists are saying, we don't want British law, French law. We want Islamic law. That's what the Muslim fundamentalist essentially is saying. These countries that have been colonized by the West, with their alien social, political and legal systems interposed in our countries, and that's what we find, Egypt, Tunisia, Syria, all of them. They have a mixture. Malaysia, it's all the same. A mixture of some bits of Islamic law, but with a whole heap of Western law as well. A big mishmash. Muslims are saying, no, we want Islamic law, not some other man-made rubbish. Because this is futile and this is rubbish and this is corruption and misguidance. Those are the people, they say, oh, those are the dangerous ones, those are the ones we don't like. You people who just like go to the mosque and say your prayer, you're okay, that's okay, just keep doing that. But these ones, no. Why don't they like them? You know why? Because unlike us, these people study their history. You see, they study the history, they've read the history, and they say, wait a minute, when these people followed their religion, they were strong and powerful, and we were quaking in our boots. And they were the ones who dominated the world, and we were the ones who were just like nowhere. And wait a minute, if these guys start coming back to their religion, does that mean that they're going to start becoming powerful, economically, militarily? That they're going to be developing a civilization again? And that means we won't be the big guys anymore. We won't be in charge anymore. We won't have the political, social, economic control of the world anymore. So what should we do? We will make sure that we crush them. Everything that we can do to do it, to keep them down, to keep these people backward, to keep these people in disarray, we'll do it. That's why America wants to go and Britain wants to go. They want to, what did they say? Reshape the map of the Middle East. To do what? To bring democracy, so they call it. It's not democracy they want to bring. What they want to bring is their disintegrating society, their corrupt civilization. It's not going to be justice. They're not going to bring the... I mean, there's lots of good things about the West, but I doubt those are the things that they're going to be bringing. There are a lot of good things about the West and a lot of good qualities, but I don't think those are the things they want to bring. So these are the things that every person should think about. The Muslims need to think about it, and the people who are not Muslims need to think about it. No real conclusions from all of that, just food for thought. Thank you very much, you've been very patient, and may Allah guide all of us closer to the truth. Assalamu alaikum.
Allah khairan to may Allah reward him for the good speech. Now we're open to questions regarding particularly this topic, but we also would like to say that we're open to some other Islamic related questions that you might have and would like to raise. So, one from the floor.
Very quiet.
Very quiet.
Don't be shy now.
Do you think that the real reason that Western countries have adopted more the view based on what people want is that not just because if you have it strictly based on any sort of religious law, that can be easily be misinterpreted. And so by having sort of a general consensus, there's a less chance of that happening.
I don't think that's true. The idea might sound nice, but I don't think that's the reality. I believe, in fact, that... I think what is very, very interesting in this regard is referring to some of the ideas that people like Noam Chomsky have come out with, okay, about the mass media manufacturing consent. That really, I mean, if we just think about it, you take the average person in England and ask them, what do you think is right and what do you think is wrong? What do you think is good and what do you think is evil? What do you think is appropriate and what do you think is inappropriate? Think about those things. Now you tell me, from where did you get that information? From where did you get your ideas of right and wrong, good and evil, what you should do and what you shouldn't do? Think about it. Anyone? Tell me. Not Muslims, I don't want you to say the Quran, right? But your idea of good and evil, right and wrong, what I should do, what I shouldn't do, where did you get that information from? Who taught you those things? Where did you get that knowledge from? Anyone? Your parents? Yeah, and? Public opinion. Yeah, and? The media. And? Come on. School, your friends, your opinions. Okay, that's where people get their ideas of right and wrong from. Government, media, parents. But their parents, where did they get their ideas of right and wrong from? Government, media. If you really think about it, okay, at least the Muslim can say, I've got a book here, right? And this book tells me, I don't have a Quran with me, I've got a book here, and this book, here it is, it's all written down. I mean, at least the Americans have got a constitution, although it doesn't seem to make any difference. They can just undermine it any time George Bush comes along or whatever. But still, the Muslims say, here it is written down. This is what God says is right and what is wrong. You got something to... But what have you got to refer to? Nothing. You got to refer to the Sun, BBC, ITV, Channel 4. That's it. That's your point of reference. Tony Blair. Okay? Those are your points of reference. My friends, what do all my friends say? Oh, what are you saying, guy? Okay, bad. We'll say the same thing, right? I mean, we have to really think about, okay, it's all very nice. If you're talking about a highly educated society where everyone has studied philosophy and religion and whatever, and all of those things, and every single one of them is making an extremely intellectual, informed decision, although I'd still say, what is that compared to the knowledge and the guidance of God, right? But still... That will be something. At least you could say, well, maybe you got something there. But what? Western society? Where most people are more interested, right? In, you know, who won the latest football match? Is Arsenal going to win the FA Cup? Or is it going to be Man United? Or this? So that's what people are interested in. Going down to the pub and having a beer. I'm sorry. That's the fact. And who's going to be on page 3 tomorrow? That's the average person in this democratic society. They're just ruled and manipulated by who? These ideas that people have are a product of what? You see, look at the Gulf War. Look at this is a perfect example. I've been absorbing not the Gulf War, this war that they're going to want to start against Iraq. When it all started off, it was like 58% or maybe even more of people thought Saddam Hussein did not have any weapons of mass destruction. That's what the weapons inspector said, right, from before. They said, he's got nothing. 99% of his weapons are gone, and he's got like maybe 1%, and even those are chemicals that are going to deteriorate after these 10 years. He's got nothing. That's what the last lot of weapons inspectors have said. Now, it's like, and that started off, most people thought Saddam hasn't done it, but propaganda, day after day, Al-Qaeda, chemical attack, this, such and such, weapon inspectors, and what do? Boom, they get brainwashed, and now it's all turned around. Now most people do think he's got weapons of mass destruction. In America, they think that Saddam Hussein is a direct threat to that. They're going out and buying tape to stick on their windows. And boarding their windows up, they think Saddam himself is going to send missiles over to blow up America. This is what these people think. So, if this is the mentality of those people who are so uninformed, if before September the 11th you asked them to show them where New York was on a map, they couldn't even do it. That's most Americans didn't even know where New York was. Are these the people you think are going to be entrusted to make some... No, I'm sorry, I just don't agree. This isn't democracy. It's the illusion of democracy. First of all, you tell people, this is what you want. Do you want it? Yes, we do. That's what's happening. You know, you want this? That? Yeah. That's it. You know? So really, it's just like leading leading the sheep to slaughter. What is really going on is what? Is that they want us to worship them. Who's they? Who's they is Nike, Gap, multinational corporations, big businesses, the media, Disney, Warner Brothers, all the rest of it, Microsoft. Those are the ones, they want us to worship them. Put our trust in them. Put our hope in them. That direct all our efforts and our attentions to them and their ideals. Who benefits from the materialistic philosophy? The idea that there's no God. You're just an evolved monkey after all. Right? You and me, what are we? What are we? Evolved apes. How do you make a monkey happy? Give monkey banana. Give man monkey, woman monkey. Give monkey something to play with. You got a happy monkey. So what are we? We're laughing, but this is the truth. So if you remember I said in the beginning, right? If I said in the beginning that in fact, and this is why I said this is an interesting thing we could get diverted and we come back to it. This is what we're going to get diverted by. How come justice is so important to human beings if we're just like evolved monkeys? If we're just really animals and there's just the material, how come justice is so important? How come all these needs that we have that are not material needs at all? Okay? And this makes us understand that there's a lot more to the human being than that. But you know what? They want to keep us miserable. They want to keep us astray. They want to keep us enslaved. Because why? We'll keep on buying their products, watching their movies, buying their magazines, drinking their drinks, going on their holidays, etc., etc., etc. You know, democracy is just a nice way to do that. So, every system is, of course, open to exploitation. But I think a religious system, yes, it can be exploited, yes, it can be abused, that is true. Okay? But that depends on the religious system. But the fact is that if you've got a book, and you're telling people to refer to that book, remember, in the Middle Ages, the only people who read the book, the Bible, were the priests. You're not even allowed to read the Bible. If you were a common person, first of all, you didn't know how to read because the only people who knew how to read were the monks. And if you wanted to study how to read and write, you had to join a monastery. You had to join the priesthood. It's the only way you get to learn to read and write. And if you weren't part of the priesthood, you could be killed for reading the Bible. That's not the case with Islam. Every Muslim should know how to read the Quran. The Quran has always been in the hands of people, not in the hands of a few. So at the end of the day, we have something we can go back to. You know, so it depends again on the religion. Okay, those things do depend. So, you know, of course, I admit without any doubt that every system is open to abuse and exploitation. But I would say, if you just average it out, no. I would say the system of Islam is going to be the best one. It's going to be superior, even with the weaknesses of the human beings, by far. But, you know, that's just something to think about, really, my opinion. Just from at the back.